Welcome to Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, where you'll get a sneak peek into stories and lives behind the authors, entertainers, and celebrities that you love to read about. Sit back, relax, and let Lisa and her guests entertain you. Now, here's your host, Lisa.
Good evening. This is Lisa, your host of Lisa's Walk the Talk Show. And tonight I have with me Lori Rader Day. How are you, Lori?
I'm doing great, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
I am so glad to have you on the air, and I'm looking forward to our book signing on Wednesday this week with Jeff Lowry. And I need to know, how do you guys know each other, and you guys are like this couple that can just go everywhere together and do your book signings. And I've never seen it. It's awesome. It's a great way to self-promote and co-promote both. So tell me a little bit about the two of you, because she's not with us tonight. So we'll get her earful on Wednesday.
For sure. We are great friends. And, we met at a mystery conference. There's a whole world out there of mystery readers and writers, and we love to hang out together. So we were at the same mystery conference. I think we had friends in common. She's from the Midwest. I'm from the Midwest. And it was just a love match. We've been friends ever since.
Oh, that's wonderful. And so did you start out writing? I read your bio a little bit, and it sounds like a lot of your influences are the same as a lot of people's, but maybe you could just say who they are. Judy Blume is one of my favorites, so I'll just give her an extra plug there.
Oh, I love Judy Blume. I was a big reader when I was a kid. My mom would walk us to the public library, and we'd come home with stacks of books under our arms. So Judy Blume was one of my early favorites. My very first favorite was Beverly Cleary. I don't know if you're a Ramona Quimby girl from way back, but I loved Ramona Quimby, and actually that was how I got started writing, because I loved Ramona's stories and I tried to write one. So my first creative act was one of theft. My crime career began. But I loved Judy Blume, and one of the first writers that I read the adult books were Agatha Christie and Mary Higgins Clark. I was sent upstairs from the children's library because I had read everything, said the children's librarian, and I was nervous to pass by the big desk because I knew I was no adult, and here I was in the adult section. So I ducked into the very first room that was open, and it was the mystery room. And so I found Agatha Christie was one of my early favorites.
Isn't that something? Do you know the list of people you have on your list, Beverly Cleary, Judy Blume, Lois Duncan, Agatha Christie, and Mary Higgins Clark, still today are my best-selling authors in my store. Of course, Patterson, Baldacci, and all that, but I'm talking like old-school authors that I grew up with as well. And truth be told, if I look across my bookshelf and I squint a little bit, I've got a few Beverly Cleary that I've got.
I hope so.
I won't throw. Well, I don't have that many of my children's books yet. Just maybe 30, maybe a little more. But I just had a little boy in last week with his grandma, I think it was, and I sold him on the Ralph on a Motorcycle. And I said, this was my husband's favorite book of all time. And the little boy is like, oh, I'm not sure. It's not, Dog Man or something.
And, it's not Captain Underpants. I don't want it.
No, actually, I get a lot of kids reading The Boxcar Kids, or Where the Red Fern Grows, The My Side of My Mountain. I was privileged to get to do an interview with Jean Craighead George, who was one of my absolute favorite authors as a child growing up, as was Wilson Rawls. I got to meet Wilson at our school. He was an author that came to visit. And Jean Craighead George, I think she was 90 or somewhere in her early 90s when I interviewed her. And then she passed not too long after that. But that was a real gem for me. And so I wanted to pass that on to this little kid. It's like, this was one of my husband's favorite books. And just then my husband walks in and I go, Dave, what's your favorite book of all time? And he looks at me. He didn't know what the kid had on the table. And he goes, oh, Beverly Cleary's Ralph on a Motorcycle. And I said, now, why did you like that? I started interviewing him in front of the kids. And this, you know, he for me. But anyways, the kid was just smiling ear to ear when he left. And his grandma would have bought him anything he wanted in the store, a manga, a new graphic novel, the Fire Wings, or Wings of Fire, I'm sorry, I got that wrong. And but no, he decided to go old school and go with our recommendations. So we're pretty good at getting those old books in kids' hands. Yeah.
A mouse on a motorcycle, you can't go wrong.
Well, you can't go wrong with A Cricket in Times Square either. That was another one of my favorites, or James and the Giant Peach. So, I mean, you probably have really fond memories of being in elementary school and getting your first books. I mean, I know most writers do, and people do. They just seem to, it just resonates with them. It's that moment. And a lot of, I can't believe this, but I really am telling the truth. The kids are walking out with old classics. They absolutely love the old classics. I even have 10, 12-year-olds reading War and Peace. I'm like, I didn't even finish that. I don't know how you're going to.
Whoa.
But, yeah, no, I'm being serious. You'll see it when you guys are up here. I mean, it's amazing. And I'm just wondering, do you ever have plans for writing for a younger group, like a YA, or are you sticking with where you're at right now with the historical fiction?
I would love to, I mostly write contemporary fiction. This Death at Greenway is my only historical so far. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But for a younger group, I don't think I would ever do young adult, but I love middle grade. I love that age group of, you know, the 8 to 12 age group of fiction. I read it still now as an adult because I think it's just a magical time in a reader's life. It's when they really connect with books and they become huge readers in that moment. Usually, you know, most people I think who are huge readers become a huge reader at 8, 10, and maybe it's because they're encountering books maybe and getting to choose them for the first time themselves, you know, at the school library. You mentioned little kids reading. I remember very fondly Scholastic book fairs at my school. Did you have those?
Oh, are you kidding? I actually just found a slip for one of those in a book from like 1970. I'm like, oh no, now I'm dating myself.
Oh my God.
1990. But I pulled it out of the book and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to laminate this like a bookmark. I absolutely love book fair day and book, like the weekly thing where you had to go buy your books. But the book fairs were something extra special because you got to buy the erasers and the pencils and the, I don't remember if they had highlighters back then, but you bought all those little nifty things that went with the books. So yeah, and I think one of my books was Golden Cloud that I bought, and to this day I still haven't read it, but I still have the book. I have intentions of reading that. It's only like 50 years old. Oh, I was just asking you, what was one of your earliest favorites?
So one of my earliest, well, after Ramona Quimby, obviously, but I still have my original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or is it Willy Wonka?
Oh.
I can't remember which one it is in the book. The Chocolate Factory, it's got my, you know, big, fat, third grade handwriting in the front cover, you know, to make sure that I got it back if anybody else ever catched it, but I didn't really let it out of my sight. I loved it so much.
Were you one of those kids that would stick the books that you wanted to read that you couldn't check out because you were over your limit and you'd hide it behind another row of books and nobody would find it?
I mean, Lisa, I'm that kind of kid right now. I have so many library books out and so many books in my house that I bought and I haven't even had a chance to read yet. Yeah, I'm a bookaholic for sure.
That's awesome to hear. I know. You know what my biggest downfall is? Somebody will come into the store. Okay, this just happened 2 weeks ago. A man came in and goes, do you have any copies of Captain Alan Quincy's The Chum Boys, I'm trying to think of what the title was. I go, no, I'm going to look that up. So I look it up. I go, hey, that's Edward Stratemeyer's series. That's one of his, you know. And I said, you know, I'm going to go home and order that tonight. Well, of course they had the whole eight books. I had to buy all eight of them. Oddly, they arrived.
Of course you did.
Of course, you know, why not get them all? And if I'm going to invest my time, invest into it, I want to do like the whole thing. So we get home, and here's this big, huge box. soaked. I mean, we had a bad rainstorm evidently. Why is it work? I'm like, oh no, I hope that's not books. And so we get into the kitchen and my husband opens it up and sure enough, it's books. It's that set of books. But thank you, eBay seller, who sold them to me and then carefully wrapped them in like 17 plastic bags inside individual boxes on top of it. So it was like a Christmas gift. Yeah, he saved the whole lot. And he doesn't know that yet because I haven't left the feedback yet. But, boy, he's getting some good feedback tonight. But no,
awesome.
That I look forward to reading that. And I read a lot of old classics. Not classics. Well, I do read old classics as well, but I like to read old series just because I love that period of writing in the 40s, 50s, 60s. I read current books as well. But I think my heart is kind of stuck into the historical past, maybe my youth. But is that, I mean, writing historical fiction, tell me, because that is another one of the genres that's top selling for 4 years in my store, every day, like, what do you have for historical fiction? And I thought, well, I think I'm sold out now because this whole front table was all historical fiction. And literally within a few hours, new release days, I bring books in a few times a week, brand new releases, and the rest is new and used. And we bring in books every day, of course. But the historical fiction doesn't slow down. I mean, people are absolutely in love with that. And I don't know what turned the key for that. Do you have an answer for that? What has made that? Was it Bridgerton? I don't know. I mean, something turned the key.
I don't know. I mean, I know Bridgerton is really popular. I don't know what, I mean, is that a new phenomenon? I feel like people are sort of in waves, maybe the World War II wave. For some reason, it just won't stop. There are so many World War II stories. I mean, didn't stop me from doing one, but I know it's a really popular era to read about.
It is, but I just am noticing it's like stronger right now. It could be my clientele. You know, I've got a lot of people that are world travel and live all over the world, and they're older, and they like women's fiction. They like commercial fiction. They like historical fiction. So, or they want the beach read. And, of course, we've got a mixture of everything in the store. But I just am curious because I think it's a fantastic genre. I think it's really hard. I just judged a writing contest a few weeks ago for a romance group, and it was really hard for me to score a couple of the authors because they were talking in modern day terms that absolutely didn't fit in the historical time period. And I still gave them good points, but just said, hey, you check your language out, or I don't remember my exact words, but they did. I mean, the stories, I was hooked on all of them. I liked all of them. They were all three historical too, so it was really fun to get to read all of those in that genre. Yeah, but
I've always written contemporary. This was a departure for me, sort of an idea that I got, and it just wouldn't leave me alone. I can tell you a little bit about it if you're interested.
Yeah, thank you.
The book is called...
I didn't know. Do you want to read an excerpt, or are you not... Do you like doing excerpts or not? If not, just read us. Tell us a little bit about the book then.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you about the idea and then a little bit about the book, and then I'll read an excerpt from it.
That sounds good.
So I got the idea from reading a nonfiction book about Agatha Christie, one of my favorite writers, right? It's a nonfiction book called Agatha Christie's Secret Notebooks. It's by John Curran, and he's a researcher who was allowed into the archives of the Christie estate, and he went through her notebooks, and Agatha Christie was a notebook girl. The book is mostly about how she wrote and how her stories developed over time, and he sort of cataloged her notebooks that she left behind and traced sort of the path of all her stories from notebook to notebook, because she didn't have like a notebook per book or a notebook per story. She had notebooks, and she had several houses, and she had several notebooks in each house. And she would sort of just pick up one, whichever one was nearest, and jot down notes when she was trying to noodle an idea out. You know, she was stuck. She mostly wrote in her head, and then she would type it. And, you know, and then draft from there. But, and then if she got stuck, she would go to the notebook and sort of worry a problem out and then go back to the typewriter when she figured it out. And so he had written this book, and it sort of walks you through all of her books and the progress that she made over time. So fascinating stuff for a writer and someone who loves Agatha Christie. Really good bedtime reading, though, because, you know, if you read a few pages, you're ready for bed. But inspired to work. The introduction of this work said, in just a very few words, not even a full sentence, as though everyone already knew that Agatha Christie's beloved summer home, Greenway, in South Devon, England, was once used to house child evacuees from World War II, from London. Just in very few words, not, maybe like seven words, it was, you know, child evacuees, Greenway, World War II. And I sat up in bed because this was a moment where the Venn diagram of things I'm interested in became a circle. Because one of my favorite movies as a kid and still is Bedknobs and Broomsticks, a Disney movie, one of the first Disney movies that had animation and live action together. It had a very young Angela Lansbury, rest in peace, Angela Lansbury, which, she was an apprentice witch. She was a woman doing like a correspondence course to become a witch. And but she lived in a big house by herself, and she was forced to take orphans from London to get away from the bombings. So I don't know if everybody else loves Bedknobs and Broomsticks and Agatha Christie as much as I do.
That's a good movie.
During World War II, 3 million people, most of them school-age children, were evacuated away from London and other metropolitan areas, the big cities, to the country, to help protect them when bombings came, because suddenly we're in warfare where there are going to be planes and there's chemical warfare and there are new things to worry about. And so the plan was to evacuate as many people out of London as possible. And here I'm learning for the first time in my life, a huge Agatha Christie fan, that her house was actually used to house children who were being evacuated out of London. And I just knew that I needed to read that story. The problem was nobody had written it. And I sort of sat on that idea for a good 5 years, I think, while I wrote other books and published other books and promoted other books. And then I got the chance to actually write that book for my publisher. And an idea that had been, you know, something that I just wanted to read, maybe somebody would get to it, maybe an English author maybe would write this story, and no one did, and no one did, and no one did. And so finally, Harper Collins said, you know, we're calling you on your bluff. We want to buy that book. So I had to write it.
Wow.
So
Death
of Greenway.
Story.
Thank you.
You've been able to win an Agatha Award for that, right? Yeah.
I did.
I'm sorry,
I did. That's the end of the story. That it won in May. It won the Agatha Award for Best Historical Novel this year.
I was going to ask you.
Very
exciting. You found out in January. In January, you found out you were a nominee for it. So you had to wait until when did you actually find out that you had won? Like a few months later? Did you have to wait with that angst in you all those months?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it works, right? I mean, it is an honor to be nominated. So really, the moment you're nominated, you've already got a prize, right? So that's the good news.
True.
And then the award is given out at one of those mystery conferences I mentioned where I met Jess, called Malice Domestic. It takes place near Washington, D.C. It's a great place to go if you're a mystery reader, and especially if you love this kind of traditional mystery story. And, you know, you spend the weekend hanging out with your mystery friends and other readers and listening to panels, being on panels, and then at the end of the weekend there's a ceremony and the winner is announced. It's a big moment.
Oh, that's got to be just an incredible feeling and nerve-wracking at the same time. But, you know, just being nominated, that's the big honor. I mean, nobody can ever take that glory away from you. If you don't win the big one, big prize, it's okay. You just try another one, right? I mean, I've certainly lost contests for writing and then went and submitted them somewhere else and won a huge prize. So to me, you know, even if you lose, I'm telling you, for all writers, like if you lose a contest, that's just a couple judges' opinions, and go somewhere else and try it again. I'll bet you might win a prize.
Absolutely.
Or if they give you criticism, take it. Now tell us about the lucky one, because you won a big award on that one as well, right? The lucky one is about, I'm just wondering, because you're from Indiana, did you get some story from like your hometown and then you just kind of embellished on that? Is that a base point of truth or anything?
The story behind the lucky one is actually even closer to home than, you know, being from Indiana. I live in Chicago now. I've been mm-hmm. in Chicago for 20 years, and we got new neighbors one day, and this cute little family moved in next door. And when I first met them, the mother was introducing me to her little girl, and she said, oh, this is Eden. And Eden's about a year and a half years old. And I had just turned in my new book, in which the main character's name is Eden. And I thought, well, this is bad news, because I don't usually use names of people I know. And here's this little Eden who's a year and a half, and I write somewhat dark stories. I felt like I needed to introduce mm-hmm. myself and let this woman know what I did, so she wouldn't be surprised later that I had a character named after her daughter in my book. And but we share a fence with these neighbors, this like ugly short chain link fence, and we would talk over it. And very not too long after that, we were talking about the fence and how we maybe would replace it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's really ugly. And she said, oh, I don't like it, but not because it's ugly, but because I'm afraid someone's going to grab Eden over the top of the fence. And I had never thought of something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah, it was a very dark moment. And I thought, well, I'm usually the person who thinks of that sort of stuff. And
yeah.
I thought, well, yeah. I hadn't thought of that, but I'm not a mother, so maybe that's why. And she's like, oh, no, it's because mm-hmm. I was kidnapped as a child. So this very sweet, cute, normal young mother is telling me, like, oh yeah, I was kidnapped as a child. And I thought,
wow.
Well, that is okay, you just is, I'm like, okay, stop, before you continue to tell me this story, you should know that you just became the protagonist of my next book. Is that okay? And she's like, yeah, it's great. I'm like, I don't really think so, but okay. And then combine that with mm-hmm. the fact that when I was 8 years old, there was a neighbor girl from just down the street who disappeared, who was 12. Somebody I should not have known, because 4 years, you know, at that age is a big difference. But I did know her. We had at least one conversation on the school bus about birthday parties and decorations and colors for that. And she was rather bossy, so I remembered her really clearly. But she disappeared, and they called her runaway, and nothing was really ever really said about her in the newspaper. I know that because I went back and researched that incident to see how it was handled, what happens when a child of that era goes missing. Turns out not very much, and you know, there was no Amber Alert. There were no some of the modern things that we would do now did not exist.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years later, her older sister was actually found murdered. And that part of the story was a huge, of course, deal in our town, but also my grandfather was one of the first people on the scene.
I think my show is ending here.
Hello?
We are talking.
Okay.
We are talking with Lori Raterday, and she is giving us some great stories here. She will be at our book signing at Peacock Books on Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 2. And come on down, get a signed book, and this show will be rebroadcast over on the different affiliates. Lori, thank you for joining us today. This is Lisa, your host, signing off until next broadcast, when I'll be back with another featured guest to continue this Walk the Talk journey.
You've been listening to Lisa's Walk the Talk show. If you're an author or entertainer and you'd like to be considered for an upcoming broadcast, log on to Lisa's Walk the Talk website at www.lisalc.com for more information. That's www.lisalc.com. Lisa will be back next week to continue this Walk the Talk journey.